Welcome to the SB Live California podcast. My name is Connor Morissette. A little bit later on in this episode, you'll hear from our team of reporters, myself, Lance Smith, and Bodie DeSilva, about the playoff action in football we saw last week, and then we'll preview all the championships this upcoming weekend. But we needed to start with me just talking about the modern-day hazing situation, the story that broke in the Orange County Register today. We recorded the next segment where we preview all the games before that news broke, and so I just wanted to address this before. There's a reason we don't talk about it when we break down the modern-day Servite game and the modern-day Centennial game from a week ago, because at the time of recording it, of course, we didn't know that this story was coming out. So if you're unfamiliar with it, it's called Bodies, which, let me try to explain it the best way I can. It's when two teammates or two guys engage in punches back and forth from the waist to the shoulder, and you go blow for blow, and it ends when one player says, "I quit," and the other is seen as tougher. It's like an exercise in who is tougher, basically. It's a sort of hazing. It's just something that I guess has been done in this locker room for a while. It's common, according to the article, and so in this particular instance, it went a little bit too far, and one of the kids who was engaged in it clearly was having a tough time, and then the other kid began to hit him in the face, and he broke a nose. So the police department recommended that the district attorney's office file felony battery charges. So it's a very serious situation, a very serious story, and then the OC Register goes into how the school responded after that incident happened, and it's really good investigative journalism. I recommend everybody go read it. At scorebooklive.com/California, we've reached out to some of the athletic staff involved, and we're trying to get as much information as we can. Is Bruce Rawlinson, who isn't painted in a very good light in this story, is he available to coach on Friday? What is happening in the modern day athletic office in terms of a response to this story? We're trying to gather as much information as we can, and so once we are able to publish something, we will. You can follow along at scorebooklive.com/California. But for right now, we're not talking about this as the episode goes on, because once again, we recorded the podcast before we knew about this situation. So wanted to give everyone a heads up on that. Thank you again for listening. And now we'll talk about the upcoming games this week and what we learned from a week ago. Hope you enjoy. We're into the championship week for high school football here in Southern California. It's also Thanksgiving week, so happy Thanksgiving to everybody. What a crazy week we had in the semifinals. So much to talk about. Lance, you saw the game of the year, the upset of the year, Servite over St. John Bosco. I want to start with that, so we'll get to that in a second. Bodie, you already saw the Open Division Championship in San Diego, and you had the luncheon today. So how are you guys doing? Bodie, we'll start with you. How are things down in San Diego?
Yeah, doing well. It's kind of weird when you have open division first and start with that. But in these other divisions, there's some great matchups really across the board. Several of them are rematches from earlier this season and previous CIF finals. So coaches are definitely ready to get going. And kind of a weird week having Thanksgiving and then being ready to play the next day or two. So it'll be fun the rest of the week. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, definitely. Lance, got to start with you. So Servite goes into Bellflower and wins 40-21. And talking to Noah Fafita and Troy Thomas the other day, just the game plan was so different. And you were there. I want to hear all about it. I recorded it on my TV. It's going to re-air Thursday on Thanksgiving. I'm going to try to watch it Friday morning. But they ran the ball pretty much the whole game. Noah didn't really throw it that much. Talk to me, Lance, about the game plan, about afterwards, how happy those players were, your takeaways. Because I was really surprised at that scoreline, and I'm sure you were too. What were your takeaways?
Well, since you asked, let me start here in terms of how they looked after the game. I got the sense from Servite, let me use these three words because we all know them. Job's not finished. That's the vibe I got from Servite. Job's not finished. I think my adrenaline was as high as some of the players were. Like, they were pretty calm. Like, it was... For such a monumental historic victory, there wasn't as much like celebration or anything. I think it was just a combination of humility and laser focus on the task. This coming week, I got the sense that even though some might say they're playing with house money, they're not. That's not their mindset. So wanted to start with that. And I guess, you know, Servite is always very businesslike, so it just checks it out. It was a good look. So what did I see? I saw St. John Bosco play pretty much the same game on both ends as the last time these two teams played. Well, I mean, one of the big X's and O's things we were looking at is bracketing TMAC for Servite's or for Bosco's secondary. I couldn't even really tell you if they did too much of that because they came out, Servite came out, forced a three and out, ran the ball every single time, made it down the field in like 2 minutes, scored. I don't even know if they handed it off one time. I think Noah ran it every single time. And then they did the exact same thing, rinse and repeat. Force a three and out, and then Noah runs it every single time. Maybe Houston Thomas got in on it a couple times. Next thing you know, they're up 14-0, which is more points than they had their entire last game against them. At that point, it's still, I think, halfway through the first quarter. So that was wild. And I never was super well able to put my finger on why is Servite running the ball so well, even though they're keeping in their spread formations and they're going to the same thing over and over again, these little 4 and 5 yard gains. And why is it working so well? And I mean, just because it's not what we know them for. And I got a couple things. One of them was that their run blocking was just next level. Fafita threw 8 passes, completed 6 of them, wasn't a big part of the game. On those pass attempts, their pass protection was tight. It wasn't great, but their running, their ability from a team-wide perspective, obviously starting with the O-line, but everyone, to run block and keep plays alive, and just the synchronicity was next level. And St. John Bosco was afraid to adjust, and I think you could have played 8 quarters and probably a similar thing would have kept happening. And I mean, how do you pull the trigger on loading the box? No matter what is going on, how do you pull the trigger as an opposing coach on loading the box when T-Mac and Mikey Welsh and Kian Burnett are all still running around being thrown to by Noah Fafita? I mean, there's just, well, what do you do? There's nothing you can do. Still, with the size of Bosco's front 7, and just how good they are at stopping the run year to year, I was still surprised they struggled so much with it. But just credit Servite's game plan for being not just 1 step ahead, but 2 steps ahead, sticking with it even on some plays where everyone was expecting some a pass. That there were some third downs where everyone thought they were going to pass, and they just stuck with the run. And it kind of looked like psychological warfare. Like, they came in saying, we're going to swing hard, and either they're going to adjust first, or we're going to make them make multiple subsequent adjustments before we budge. And I loved it. Offensively, Bosco was just kind of where they've been at. Servite played an amazing defensive game. Their coverage was so good. I would have liked to see a little bit less time for Bosco's quarterbacks behind the line of scrimmage sitting in the pocket. But other than that, there was just no miscues for Servite. Rayshon Luke had a couple touchdown runs, or one was on a short pass. I thought Bosco should have gone to him more. Servite's guys had a little bit of trouble tackling him, as tends to be the case with guys trying to tackle Rayshon Luke. But yeah, it was just a similar game from Servite or from Bosco, and just next level, next gear adaptations from Servite, who had energy at the beginning. They had energy at the end. They were not the running out of gas team that we thought they were one bit.
Yeah, so I have a little egg on my face after saying that I thought they were going to be tired in that game, and saying how the coaches really needed to improve what they did in that first week, and how I wasn't sure they could do it. And by first week, I mean that first St. John Bosco game. And then, lo and behold, Sean Coley and that offense, they run something completely unexpected, and it works, and it looks brilliant, and they win. So he deserves all the credit. I think defensively, Troy Thomas deserves a lot of credit, because remember in that first game, Pierce Clarkson, they had him dead to rights, and twice he sprinted out of a sack and threw a touchdown. So I think they tightened a little bit of that up clearly. And so the coaching really improved from Servite. And Noah reminded me when I spoke to him this week, they had Bosco after the Modern Day game, and it was a short week. Part of the reason why they didn't look great against Santa Margarita early was because they spent 2 weeks preparing for St. John Bosco. So the coaching staff deserves a ton of credit. And I just want to end analyzing this game with this. I'd like to apologize to St. John Bosco because I fired up Servite. I angered the Servite coaching staff. They listened to the podcast, and Troy Thomas pulled me aside and at the luncheon and grinning as he always does, being, you know, smiling. It's all in good fun. Said, thanks for believing in us. And I was like, I'm not really sure what he's talking about. Oh, you're welcome. And he's like, I listened to your podcast last week. And I was like, oh, crap. Oh, geez. Okay. Yep. You're right. Sorry about that. And he was like, nope, no worries at all. Do it again this week. It fired me up. So we'll see when I pick the championship in a few minutes, but I wanted to include that in there. Sorry to the Brave Nation for angering Servite and poking the bear, because I had clearly a lot to do with that game. No, I'm just kidding. But I thought that was funny that Troy Thomas listened to it. And it's nice when, you know, what you don't think is going to happen happens, and you're surprised. I think that's why football is so fun. They got to play the game. So just wanted to end with that. But we'll get to Lance when we preview the modern day Servite game in a little bit. I'm really excited for that because I think you got to play modern day completely different. They eat the run alive. Will Noah try to run a little bit more than he did maybe in that first game? Sure. But of course, you have to do more than just run against the Monarchs. I mean, looking at that Corona Centennial game, their running backs probably combined for like 40 yards total. Izzy Carter was the leading rusher. So I'll quickly just talk about that game now. Modern Day 21, Corona Centennial 16. So in the championship in D1, it'll be Modern Day Servite. My first bullet point here, Corona Centennial could have won. They had two goal line stuffs Modern Day did on Corona Centennial. If those were both touchdowns, it's probably a Huskies against Friars championship. This was the first game Elijah Brown didn't look great. He didn't throw a touchdown, threw one interception. He was 9 for 17, 139 yards. I think that's a really bad matchup for Modern Day because Corona Centennial's secondary is so good. And Lance, you said Servite's secondary improved against St. John Bosco. So I think on paper, Corona Centennial clearly has the better secondary. But if Servite's secondary can play better than they did the first time around, that will give the front seven of Servite some time to get after Brown because he looked very uncomfortable in this game. But the difference was Relique Brown. And that's why I think Servite will have a tough time again, just because you can slow down the passing attack for Modern Day. But then Relique Brown, if they start running the ball, is so tough to deal with. 29 carries, 164 rushing yards. I thought he was the difference in that game on offense. Scored two touchdowns. But overall, Modern Day looked beatable, I thought. And my question is, was Corona Centennial just a bad matchup? Or is this Monarch team actually maybe gonna have a loss at the end of the year? Because I think early in the year we thought no way. Servite played them close, but at the end that offense for Modern Day was just too dominant. And then this past week Corona Centennial showed that you can slow down the Modern Day offense. So we'll see what Troy Thomas and Servite does to try to slow them down with his own team. But those were some of my takeaways, and I just thought rotating the quarterbacks too for Centennial was a killer. Izzy Carter didn't have a great night. Carson Conklin played better. If they had stuck with Conklin, I wonder what would have happened for the whole game. So we'll see, but that's in the past. Both those guys will be back next year, and they'll probably do it again. But Lance, any thoughts from you on that game?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still having trouble grasping how Centennial held them to 21 points. And the reason I say that is, even though this might be the best Centennial team in a few years, it probably is, I don't get how it was that far away from normal. Like, not only has Modern Day been in the finals every year since 2016, this is the first time in a playoff game, or even not including Servite, a regular season game, that any team besides St. John Bosco played them remotely close. Up until that game, the closest call they had was 2019 against Mission Viejo, when they won by only 4 scores in a game they at one point led by 6. So how does Modern Day only score 21 in this one? Like, we know I'm sure the secondary was just so blanketing that the targets weren't there. But I'm still having trouble grasping it, especially when Relique Brown had the great game that he did. Like, when I saw Centennial's defense the week prior, like I said, these guys can, this defense can play with Modern Day, but I didn't see them holding Mater Dei to only 5 more points than they held Mission Viejo.
I think it's twofold, Lance. So first, defensively, I just think that unit's gotten better as the year's gone on, and they're so physical. And I'm not sure Mater Dei maybe expected that, because the past couple years they've beaten Corona Centennial pretty easily when they've matched up. But the front seven held their own. The weak point for Corona Centennial's defense are their linebackers, and their linebackers did well. We all know how great the secondary is with all the talent there. And they laid some hits on C.J. Williams that I think were some of the hardest hits he's probably had in his high school career. He didn't have the game that he's used to having in those big spots. So I want to start there. I think the defense, we maybe underrated them a little bit all year, and they're really, really good. I know at the end of the season I'm going to have Corona Centennial in my national top 25. They really proved it to me that they belonged. And then the second thing, Matt Logan is an incredible offensive coach. And even though Corona Centennial didn't score as many points as they needed to win, they didn't go 3-and-out very much. They picked up first downs. They held the ball for about as long as they needed to. They had chances to win, like I said, but it was never Mater Dei scores, 3-and-out, kick to them, and then you're down 14 in the blink of an eye. Even when Izzy Carter was out there, who struggled the first series, he rushed for 2 first downs and he flipped the field. So I want to give the coaching staff a lot of credit, because the reason I wasn't necessarily sold on Corona Centennial the whole season being in that national top 25 group was because of their offense. And I think Matt Logan and that group, of course, they have so many great players, but they showed that they are on that national level. And I think the coach, Matt Logan, helped that group to really, he helped them be more than the sum of their parts, which was really impressive to me, because they couldn't run the ball with their running backs. It just was not working. And then when they'd pass it, the pass protection held up decently enough. But Mater Dei, anytime a running back got the ball, it was no good for Centennial, and they still overcame that and executed enough to win the game. But obviously they came up a few plays short. But I hope that answers your question. I think those would be my two answers for that.
Cool. Totally makes sense. Like they kept the ball enough to where their defense wasn't on the field the whole game. Makes sense. And on the topic of how well coached they are, never seen an O-line that does everything Centennial's done, with the pace, the physicality, with underclassmen. Like, it's the topic for another day, but their O-line is freakishly well coached.
Yeah, and Logan would just dial up some plays that were just so smart. Like on a 4th-and-7 at the 15, that, because he doesn't kick field goals, which of course maybe that would come back to bite him. If you had a gripe about his coaching, then it would have been to kick. But so on a 4th-and-15 from the Mater Dei 15, or 4th-and-7, excuse me, from the Mater Dei 15, Carson Conklin's in, and they call this little, like a little screen to Cortez, and he picks up about 10 or 11 yards, and it was just masterful. Like, the offensive lineman sold it really well. Mater Dei brought some pressure. They let everyone get to Conklin, and he just dropped it right in the bucket over the top. And that's a play that I just remember thinking, like, people don't do that to Mater Dei. You don't make them look bad like that. And of course, Mater Dei ended with the last laugh on that drive. They stopped them at the goal line. But that play looked like they were going to have a chance to score. And just stuff like that was really impressive. So he always has his bag of tricks. And I think for the most part, he did a really nice job. So that's a separate discussion we could have about how good the coaching is at this upper level. So maybe we'll do that at the end of the season. But I was very impressed with that. So for Bodie now, let's talk about San Diego. I think all year, Bodie, we kind of thought Cathedral Catholic. I know for 1 week after they lost those 2 games to the out-of-section teams, I maybe had Carlsbad ahead for 1 week. But then it became pretty clear that Cathedral Catholic was the team to beat. And we saw that last week with how they pretty much dismantled Carlsbad, and now they'll go on to the state playoffs. What were your takeaways from that one?
Yeah, I expected it to be a close game, and Carlsbad has so many seniors, so many experienced guys that made big plays, not just this season, but back in the spring, and they've kind of waited for this moment. But I guess I shouldn't have found that it was too much of a surprise, because when I saw Carlsbad in week 7, I believe, against Torrey Pines and Cathedral are doing almost identical things on offense. Cathedral just happens to do it with bigger guys. So their offensive line's better. Their running back is as good as it gets around. And Torrey Pines ran all over Carlsbad that night, scored 36 points, and it took a last second drive to kind of win that game for Carlsbad. So I guess I should have looked at that more and realized that, hey, when Cathedral settles in and does what they want, and that's exactly what they did. Their senior running back, Lucky Sutton, was incredible, as he has been for the last 2 years. And his first play from scrimmage, he goes 56 yards, ends up getting tackled and scored two plays later. To start the second half, he went 78 yards, and on the next drive goes 88 yards. And it was just, their line was dominant and made wide open holes. And when he gets to that next level, he's gone, and ended up with 275 rushing yards and three touchdowns, and could have been a lot more had they still been trying to score. So Carlsbad, they scored on their opening possession and got into Cathedral territory the next two times. But I think after that, Cathedral kind of locked in and figured out what exactly it was that they were going to do, and didn't allow them to run the ball very much. And then if you can just pass rush, even with a quarterback as talented as Julian Sain, it just made it super difficult if you don't have that one guy that can go beat your guys outside. And Carlsbad has some playmakers outside, but they're equally athletic as Cathedral's defensive backs are. So that really negated that. And up front, Cathedral just took advantage of a Carlsbad line that's good, but just not big. And they've got so many big guys up front, led by Stanford commit Jackson Moy. So they had their way there. And I think those games earlier in the season, as Coach Doyle said to me, just that those kind of showed our guys against De La Salle and Centennial, like, you want to play at this level, like, that's what's expected of you. And now I don't know if they were to play that game again this week, if the results would be much different, but I think they're definitely right where they want to be as they head into this regional bowl game. And it's tough to project who they'll see. My guess is that they will see the winner of Alemany and Orange Lutheran. And that would, I think, be a really exciting matchup on both sides.
I think if they had played some of those bigger teams now, it seems to me like Cathedral Catholic sort of started the year a little slow, because remember, Bodie, we thought they had national top 25 potential because they brought everyone back. And then I think the Torrey Pines game, that first game, they won, but they didn't look great. And then they struggled in those first two. I just think it was the case of getting off to a slow start. And now it seems to me, not watching them week in and week out, but it seems to me they're firing on all cylinders. So if I was Alemany or Orange Lutheran, I don't think I'd want to play them right now, despite that slow start they had.
Yeah, and there were some injuries, and I know guys being held out with COVID and different things, and talked to one linebacker who found out he didn't even play at Centennial, and I wasn't aware of that. So there's some things. I think just getting healthy, and now that they're at this point of the year, and they had those extra 2 weeks because their Lincoln game got canceled, and then they had the bye week in the open division. So that was 2 weeks leading into Mission Hills, and there was no rust there. They came out and did what they needed to, and just an experienced team, and that staff's been in now their third open division championship. So they knew exactly what to prepare for, and they've won state before. So this next step won't be too much different.
Let's hear about some of the championship games going on this weekend. I imagine Lincoln and Modern Day Catholic will be pretty heavy favorites, right?
Yeah. So the first one will be Friday at 1 PM. That's the D4 championship, Patrick Henry and University City. They played already this year. It's a league matchup. I believe there were 106 points scored in the first one, and I think might see even more of that today. Just talking to both coaches at the lunch, and they both acknowledge that, yeah, there's some things they might do different, but both of their teams have just improved since then, and they've been offensively dominant all year. So that's one I'm definitely looking forward to, and think we'll see a shootout there. The D2 championship that night, Scripps Ranch and La Jolla, they also played earlier in the year. They also played in the 2019 championship, and that was one where Scripps Ranch entered the championship undefeated, and La Jolla team, who I believe had five losses, came in and upset them then. And they had a shootout in week two this year that Scripps Ranch just held them off. They blew a 24-point lead there at the end. So both coaches, they're good friends too, and that'll be a fun one to see. Hopefully La Jolla's Jackson Stratton, he's been battling injuries throughout the year and did not play in their semifinal game. And Coach Rush didn't really want to say whether he'd be back or not this week. We'll see. I hope for their case he is. On Saturday at the 1 p.m. game, Modern Day Catholic, who we know is so talented and has been in the top five for much of the season, they're taking on a Ramona team that I thought would be good, but I think they're really hitting their stride now. They beat a West Hills team there in The second round that had come in undefeated and to beat them by over 50 points was impressive. And then last week, go to Mount Carmel, a team who I picked to win the whole bracket, and really shut them down with a, I think, 20-point win there. So Ramona will give it their best shot. We know Modern Day Catholic is just, there's zero holes at any possible spot when you look at them. So they have to be the favorite in that one. And then the Division I championship on Saturday night, two of the most storied programs in Helix and Lincoln. And crazily, they haven't played since, I believe, 1954. So that was interesting to hear that. Two schools that aren't too far away and have been so dominant and have won so many championships. So both coaches are looking forward to that. And Helix is definitely a younger team, but they've gotten better as the year's gone on. And they challenged themselves. They went up and played Servite. They had Mission Viejo at home. And their running back, Christian Washington, is as good as it gets down here. So he'll definitely want to finish out his career in the San Diego section, whether or not there's a bowl game beyond for them. But he's had that experience. He stepped in as a sophomore and was big in their championship game 2 years ago.
Amazing. Thank you for that. Lance, let's get to some of the games a little bit more north, starting in Division One. I don't want to give Servite any more bulletin board material, so I'm certainly not going to do that. But Modern Day Servite, when we first watched that game in the regular season, Modern Day won that shootout by 9. But it was even a little bit closer than that. The big issue Servite had in the game was that they really couldn't get any stops when they needed to. I think Modern Day only punted twice, and one of them was blocked for a touchdown by Servite. So just defensively, they had some issues. So how I'm looking at this game, Lance, is I think on offense, Servite with T-Mac, Noah Fafita, the whole gang, and Sean Coley having already seen Modern Day as an opponent, just I think that unit, between a great coach and a great group of players, they're going to put up enough points to give Servite a chance. I think defensively, with Troy Thomas as the head coach, and then Mason Graham, T-Mac, Michael Hurst, who's a good corner for them, that's the unit defensively that if Servite wins, we're going to need to, like years removed, we're going to need to say, oh, remember how good Servite's defense played in that one? That's the way I see it. Gun to my head, if I had to pick right now, I think Relique Brown makes a big difference like he has all year, and Servite will have a little bit of a tough time trying to stop the both facets of Modern Day's offense, and I like him 35-28. But after last week, I certainly give Servite a chance, and that's how I see this game. How do you see it?
Man, I've been dreading this moment for a week. Never have I ever been so scared to make score predictions as I am for the top three divisions. And this is the worst. This is the worst one of all. I've been saying Modern Day goes undefeated through section championships since before the season started. I would hate, and I mean hate, to falter on that and then be wrong and they do exactly that. For Servite, I think their offense is even better now than it was then. Not because their passing game is in as much of a rhythm, but because they proved to me against St. John Bosco that they can run the ball without making it so that a defense can take any attention off of their passing game. So I think they'll probably, but at the same time, it's not like they beat Bosco because it's not like they beat Bosco by running because they couldn't pass. Like if Bosco hadn't had that defensive success against their passing game, then I don't think they would have done what they did against them. So I think the fact that now they can choose, like they can say, we can do this running thing in the same formations as we do the passing game that's been terrorizing opponents for years. And that's what I like about them against Modern Day. They can be, like the last game has unlocked a new level of unpredictability for them. And I saw more from their secondary. Everyone was flying around. I mean, I think they're going to have a better defensive game plan against Modern Day this time. So I just wish I didn't have to pick. So that, I'm going to say 34-33 Modern Day.
Okay. Hey, it's tough to pick against Modern Day. We should not feel guilty at all.
it's Relique Brown for me. Like the fact that he's playing the best ball of his Modern Day career right now. And again, like the one guy who I thought could have given Servite more problems was Rayshon Luke. I agree with what you said, that Relique Brown has the potential to lift them just to another level in this one. So, yeah, that's just wanted to touch on that.
Yep, he's a get out of jail free card. So I think he'll play that again this week. Okay, Division Two. I've been picking against Orange Lutheran. Actually, that's not fair. I picked them to win the first 2 weeks, but then I picked against them last week. I'm going to pick against them again because, and I think I have a pretty good reason here, Sierra Canyon in that semifinal win that Orange Lutheran had, they had two guys over 100 yards, and one of those two, Jason Jones, was over 200 yards. So they had trouble stopping the run. And what does Alamany do? They don't pass it. All they do is run. Casey Clausen, he had two quarterbacks. Neither of them were doing the job that he wanted halfway through the year. So he said, you know what, guys? You're just going to hand it off every time or take off yourself. And it's worked. They've rattled off all these wins in a row, won the Mission League. They're into the championship. The big takeaway I had from that Orange Lutheran game was this. Logan Gonzalez is amazing, and he's had a great season. But defensively, they couldn't stop the run. And to beat Alamany, you need to stop the run. I like Alamany because of that reason, that I'm nervous the Lancers will have a tough time stopping Floyd Chalk and Jalen Thompson. I think it's going to be a pretty high-scoring game, like a 42-35 situation. And I'm taking the Warriors. They're also at home, which doesn't hurt, too.
I have to ask you this. So why – okay. If Alamany is a running team, Sierra Canyon ran all over Orange Lutheran, but has more of a passing game a little bit right now to spread out their defense and keep them from loading the box as much as they can against Alamany. What is that edge that Alamany is going to have against Orange Lutheran that Sierra Canyon didn't quite have, even though they put up 40 points on them anyway?
I'll answer it for you. Sierra Canyon didn't have their two D1 offensive linemen studs and Michael Wooten and Kenji Swanson. Wooten to Oregon, Swanson to Stanford. And if you saw my photo on Twitter, Lance, of the five Alamany linemen who represented the Warriors at the Southern Section Championship luncheon, it was all O-linemen. Casey Clausen brought his five starting O-linemen, these five behemoths who ate pretty much the whole place in they got the buffet and they were just going to town on it. So I think Alamany, Sierra Canyon, if all their guys are healthy, they probably have a better offensive line, but I think the difference is Alamany's offensive line is healthy and that's going to make a big difference. So that's how I'd answer that.
Okay. Well, last question is, how well does Alamany stop the pass? What do you think of their secondary?
Well, I think I saw Alamany have their worst game of the year when they were killed by Mission Viejo, and their defense did okay for a little bit. It was more their offense that really shot them in the foot. But, I mean, on paper, Alamany has a really good secondary with Joseph Swen, Ephrasians Prysock, who's going to USC. Yeah. So yeah. I've seen them get beat, but I do like the makeup of their defense as well with Damonic Williams, too, who's committed to Cal. He didn't play against Mission Viejo. I think I've been underrating Alamany's defense a little bit all year just because they didn't play very well when I saw them, but it seems like they've gotten better. But on the flip side, they had in the two games they had against Bishop Amat, they won, but they gave up a boatload of points in both of those games. I think their offense is pretty explosive. Like, they'll have guys rip off 50 and 60-yard runs, so their defense doesn't get the necessary breaks they need sometimes. But I think that's a legitimate concern. How good is Alamany's defense? Logan Gonzalez has been picking everyone apart with his arm so far in these playoffs. Alamany has some guys, but against Caden Semenza, who's a really good quarterback, D1 guy, they had some issues, so they could certainly have some issues against Olu.
Yeah, I'm going to ride with what you said, though. Agreed on all of that, but the strength of Olu's defense is stopping the pass a little bit more than the run. Not that they have a bad front seven, but for that reason, I'm going to take Alamany 40 to Olu 34.
Awesome. In D3, Apple Valley, I know you've been dying to talk about them, Lance, since we started rolling here. Sarah Gardena will travel to Apple Valley in Division 3. Apple Valley, like I said, they're at home. They got the home field advantage. But I'm riding with Malik Murphy and the Sarah Cavaliers because Malik's the best player in the game, and if Jaden Denegal's healthy, which I'm not sure he is because he's missed the last few games, then that's certainly an issue. And then we could debate who the best player is. But Murphy is healthy. He's ready to go. And he's had a clutch playoff run, and I think that continues. But this is the game that I'm having a tough time picking because I feel like I picked against Apple Valley every week, and they've burned me. I didn't last week, but the first week I didn't think they were going to win. And then the second week I wasn't so sure. and they've performed really well. But I'm riding with Sarah and Malik Murphy. I think he's going to make a play at the end like he did against Etiwanda, and that'll be the difference. I think it's going to be a really tight game, come down to the last seconds.
Here's why I like this matchup for Apple Valley, because who do they have the most trouble containing? Mobile play extending quarterbacks with receivers who can just fly and extend plays around them. So that's why, you know, you look with, I always go back to the Rancho Cucamonga game. Sarah's offense reminds me of Murrieta Valley's offense. It's built around a pro style quarterback. They run the ball, but not so well. I mean, they run the ball well. I mean, Sincere Rainey, and he's not the only one. I mean, they run the ball well, but they're more comfortable being pass-centric with the pro-style quarterback and an O-line that's good but not dominant. And that is just exactly what Apple Valley's defense matches up so well with. That's why for three quarters they did well against Mission Viejo. That's why they held Murrieta Valley to 14 points. And that is why I'm going to pick the Sun Devils. And I think it's going to be low scoring. I don't expect Denigal to come back, but he's certainly not ruled out from it. Noah Seeley starting in his place. The sophomore looks better every week. Last game against Roosevelt was his best one yet. And Dustin Reynolds, who I would say is the other guy in this game that's in the conversation for best player on the field, even though he's not ranked, which he should be. The way he's broken out as a running back while also leading one of the most devastating front sevens that's just been having its way with everybody. I don't like this matchup for Sarah. I don't like it offensively for Apple Valley because Sarah's defense is balanced, and that's kind of I don't know. I think their speed in the secondary will give Apple Valley some problems, but I'm taking Apple Valley something along the likes of 24-21.
Interesting. We'll see how Scott Altenberg, the Sarah coach, what his game plan is, how he responds to the way Apple Valley plays defense. Because remember, when Murphy was hurt against Chaminade, they ran the ball like 50 times and they ended up winning. So I wonder if this is the game where Sincere Rainey gets 25 to 30 carries and Murphy runs a lot, and maybe Sarah tries to surprise Apple Valley. So I could see that happening. But like I said, I've been underappreciating Apple Valley all year. So if they come out and win, I would not be surprised in the slightest. But I think Scott Altenberg, kind of like Sean Coley and that Servite staff, you never know exactly how he's going to play things. And I think that it's going to be a little bit interesting. Quickly, in the city section, the only picks I really got right at the beginning of it all have been in the city section. So I don't know if I should pat myself in the back or quit this job and go do something else. But in the open, I thought Birmingham was going to win the whole way, so I'm going to pick them over San Pedro. And in Division One, I have Venice winning the whole way, so I like them over Canoga Park. But it pains me to pick against Canoga Park because they're a 13 seed who has just been so hot, and they're running the ball extremely well with Caden Collins, who may even pick up a college offer this week. We'll see. Their coaches have been telling me about that. So if Venice can stop the run, that's great. But no one's been able to stop the run against Canoga Park for a while. But like I said, I picked Venice at the beginning. I'm riding with Angelo Gasca, Paul Kessler, the quarterback, and I'm taking the Gondoliers. So I wanted to do a quick city section minute. Bodie, we'll finish with you here. Can you give me some sort of pick, something maybe against the grain or maybe not against the grain? Just what do you feel the best picking, and what do you feel the worst picking?
There we are. I'm back. Patrick Henry. I mean, I'll go Patrick Henry University City. I think Patrick Henry wins this one. As I said before, I mean, I'm think like we could see 120, 130 points in this. I really think they'll just keep going. And if Patrick Henry gets an early stop, that might be the difference there. I think Helix is going to give Lincoln a really good game. I think Christian Washington, we know how great he's been. Lincoln, I think, without a doubt, more talented. But I think Helix has gotten better throughout the year, and I think those games against Servite and Mission Viejo are really going to pay off. And I guess I'll go Lincoln here to give a little upset. Even though they are the one seed playing the three, Lincoln, I think it's kind of assumed that Lincoln will walk into this one, but I'll take Helix.
All right, awesome. That's been our championship preview. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week to break down all these championships. That'll be so much fun. I'm really excited for this D1 game Friday, and then I'm going to go to the city section game Saturday night. I think Lance is planning to be at the D1 game with me and then Apple Valley on Saturday night for that game against Sarah. So we're going to have a lot of great coverage on scorebooklive.com/California. Have a great Thanksgiving, everyone. Thank you again for listening. For Lance Smith and Bodie DeSilva, I'm Connor Morissette, and we'll see you next time.